Welcome, dear souls, to the Way of the Yogi discussion group. It is Saturday, March 12th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
And I'm Deborah Barclay.
And together we produce this podcast as an act of devotion to the practice and philosophies of yoga and as an act of service to the yoga community. I'd like everyone here with us today to introduce themselves by first name and briefly tell us something about you that you'd like to share.
I'm Suzanne. I have taken yoga with Zanna and am very much in tune with the way she thinks and feels, so I feel very privileged to be here sharing with this.
I'm Katrina, and I've been practicing yoga with Zanna for about 2 years, and but I've been practicing yoga for more like 10 years overall, and I find yoga to be one of the most beneficial and meaningful things in my life, and I'm happy to be here today.
Thank you. I'd like to begin by thanking everyone here and those of you you listening for sharing this experience with us. Although we've only begun to take the first steps, I have already begun to reap considerable benefits from the work we are doing here. I'm truly beginning to be able to see the effects of the workings on my consciousness in my day-to-day life and in how I behave toward myself and others. Approaching life from the yogic perspective, even with such limited experience and knowledge, has given me a window into a much more tranquil, serene, and accepting state of being. This is, I believe, the purpose for which we created the Way of the Yogi discussion group. With that said, let's find a comfortable position. Sit back and take this opportunity to find ourselves fully available to this moment. Close our eyes and let's gently set aside any external and internal distractions. Close the door and leave the dirty dishes in the sink for now. Let everything else be and bring ourselves fully into the room. Be present. Opening hearts and minds to our shared experience and to the revelations that lie ahead for each of us. All right, so in the last podcast, our second segment, we conceptually went over the second two sutras, the third and fourth sutras, right? Yeah, so the second two.
Yes.
That would be third and fourth, right? Exactly. All right. Sutra 1-3, Tara Drastu Svarupe Vastanam. Katrina?
Then the seer dwells in his own true splendor.
That's Iyengar.
And now the teaching on yoga begins.
Shearer and?
Then the seer abides in his own nature.
And that is Satchidananda. So basically what this sutra is saying is that when we clean off that lens of consciousness that's so constantly pitted by our outside impressions, everyday experiences, and the information that's constantly bombarding us from the external world, when we're able to finally allow all of that to move away, then that inner radiance, that intuition, that place of knowing can shine through when we're able to still the mind and allow the soul to simply be. The only issue that I have with this sutra is it's a very difficult place to come to. So for me, I went through the last 2 weeks and I think maybe only saw a couple of glimpses of what it might be like to experience this. I know that Iyengar says that this is something that can't be described. This is samadhi. It's the state we're reaching for, right? So if we can't describe it, he says also it can't be taught, it's something that has to simply be experienced for each person. So it's really hard to speak with any qualification on this particular sutra. It's so seldom fully accessible.
May I share two more? Number three, when the mind has settled, we are established in our essential nature, which is unbounded consciousness. Mm-hmm. Settling the mind seems to be the issue.
Right.
That's what's so hard, I find, mm-hmm. for myself. And, you know, to bring it back to your breathing, bring it back to your breathing. And I find that helps, and I find that it's better. But the mind will always have its own dance going on.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So, which brings us to the fourth sutra. Vritti sarupyam itaratra.
At other times, the seer identifies with the fluctuating consciousness.
That's Iyengar, and you've given Shearer's. You want to say it one more time?
That was three. This is four.
No, three.
You want three?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When the mind has settled, we are established in our essential nature.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, that was three. Okay, now four, yes.
Our essential nature is usually overshadowed by the activity of the mind.
Right, mm-hmm. Right, okay.
At other times, the self appears to assume the forms of the mental modifications. They're all so different, but yet the same.
Yeah, you know? It's amazing how they actually, to hear all three gives it so much more meaning.
Yes.
Because in the context of each sentence, it sounds great, but what does that really mean? Mm-hmm. And when you hear it phrased differently, it sheds a lot more light on it.
Fleshes it out, right. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that rough gem. You know, you can't really see the full brilliance of it until each facet is cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's that same.
It gives me newfound respect for Sanskrit, because there must be such subtlety to language that can't be conveyed on English terms.
Every word has so many more nuances of meaning than we can even begin to fathom.
Wow.
I mean, just the fact that our entire context of life is set in such a different setting.
Oh, right.
You know, we really can't have any idea of what the true essential kernel of meaning within each of these words is.
Yeah.
We just have to kind of grope around in the dark and find it for ourselves.
Find the truth for us.
Experience it.
That's the key.
Yeah.
Is the experience. We can sit here and talk about it as much as we want. We can, you know, beat it to death.
You know? Yeah.
But
massage it endlessly.
We're never really going to be able to understand it until we take it in and make it our own.
Yeah.
And live it. Mm-hmm. So for me, this particular sutra, I was able to get in touch with this one quite easily.
This
actually
is every day.
I know. If I blog my daily practice on my Facebook page, and I also I try to be as honest as possible with what I'm going through on a daily basis. And I know in the last week, well, just as a little background, I have a proclivity genetically toward bouts of depression. Okay, and it's been explained to me this is a chemical imbalance, this is something that I was born with, something I just have to deal with, right? And it really struck me how intensely aware of the onset of this cycle I was this time. Mm-hmm. You know, I was able to see, I could actually viscerally feel it coming on. And I think I owe that to my daily practice as well, just that deep awareness of myself. And I was able to sit in contemplation in the mornings as much as I didn't want to.
Well, good for you for even getting there.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Force myself onto my mat, right?
We commend you.
And I could really see what was happening. I could actually sit back and almost objectively look at myself as if I were observing a science experiment or something. It's really crazy. And I could see that my life overall hadn't changed. I mean, everything was pretty much the same. I'd taken on a few more classes during the week, you know. I did have some upcoming legal paperwork that I had to finish out. I had the podcast I needed to get ready for. I had My taxes, I submit them. Things like that.
Just a few stressors.
A few responsibilities that were looming. And I attached to them.
Yeah.
I allowed myself to identify with everything all at once that needed to be done right now.
Yeah.
Right now. And my immediate reaction, of course, is that manas, that mind reaction, the primitive mind, the seek pleasure, avoid pain reaction.
No, that one.
And we know where taxes fall in that.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Go jump under the covers, pull them up over your head and hide.
Yes. Yeah. What I can't see isn't going to bother
me. That's right. That's right. Which, of course, leaves everything undone.
Right.
And everything gets even...
You can't really enjoy being under the covers because deep down inside, you know it's all still there.
It just compounds.
Yeah.
Yes, everything compounds. So, obviously, I can't do everything at once. I mean, none of us can. Nobody can.
Impossible.
You can't. Everything has its time to be done, its place to be done. And as much as I say at the beginning of every class, be in the moment, be here now, breathe. For me to actually integrate that into my daily life, I can do it fine while I'm on the mat. That's one thing.
Right.
But getting up off the mat and actually putting that into practice on a daily basis is difficult.
It's the work.
It's hard to really
that's
integrate
the work.
It. Yeah. So that was my experience with these fluctuations of the mind. Mm. This interaction of the mind, the self, the ego, what I'm attaching to, what I'm identifying with, and finally with my conscience, my buddhi, my intellect. Those are the three aspects of mind. We talked about this last time, Katrina, you weren't here.
Yeah.
So first of all, the urge to go jump under the cover, that's manas, kicks in, and the self-identifying with all these things that, are so pressing, so urgent, that are just bombarding me from outside. And then allowing my intelligence, my Buddha, my Buddhi, to kick in and say, okay, this is what happened last time you did this. You laid under the covers, and it got worse and worse and worse. And nothing got done, and you got more and more depressed, and blah, 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 and... So, are you just going to
repeat,
or are you actually going to use that information that you have from what happened last time and change, or do something different? And I chose to do something different, and it took a couple of days, but it only took a couple of days rather than a few months.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
It was really amazing. And I realized also when I got back to working on what we're talking about today, what we're going to talk about today, I realized that, hey, this is the work I'm doing. This is what it means to put this into practice, and to walk this walk.
And this is what you're sharing with us.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
So that's my experience with what we're going over. Does anybody else anything that came up for them?
Well, I think for me, it's somewhat similar in being, sick and not being able to do the things that I could normally do. Basically, my husband was doing everything, cooking, doing the laundry, feeding me, everything. Yeah. And just, having that identification of I'm helpless. Like, this is who I am now. And not even seeing past that. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be better.
Yeah.
This is temporary.
Right.
And identifying with that and feeling like it was now who I am. This is, a defining moment.
Right.
And, to start to feel better and see past that.
Yeah.
It's definitely, reminded me of this, because when you, this one I underlined, by changing your mind, you change everything. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it was for the worst,
Yeah.
Because you jumped forward. You projected your future.
Right.
To not a positive.
It's that worst case scenario thing we talked about before, right?
Yeah, and that who I am in this moment is who I am forever, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That, you know? Oh yeah, there, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
That is such a good point. We attach to that identity so deeply.
So quickly, too.
And, oh, I know, and it just seems like, that's it, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I'll never get well, things will end up.
Yeah, this is who I am now. Yeah. Like, just, you know, get used to it, you know.
I'm doomed.
Yeah.
Well, and I did. I thought about people who have, you know, and, you know, thankfully, not me in this situation, but the people who have terminal illnesses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, where they, like, people with cancer, and they have to go for treatment, and this is probably, you know, somewhat, maybe, I'm sure it's worse, but they probably have these kinds of thoughts.
Yep.
You know?
Well, I even get those thoughts sort of, I guess, pulling on the depression thing. I don't know that I've ever suffered from depression. I may have. I've never been diagnosed with it. But I certainly have in past years. I've developed a really bad bout of anxiety and panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And I get them a lot. And that's one of the reasons that I didn't get them when I first started doing yoga. But when I have had sort of bad phases of it, the one thing that gets me through all of it, it has been yoga. And I don't know if anybody has ever experienced anxiety attacks, but when you say doom and things like that, I mean, I actually have gone through attacks where I really fully and firmly believe that I'm about to die and that I'm about to, like, fall over or faint, or, and I fortunately have a good friend who has the same experience, and so I've been able to discuss that with her. But it's incredibly scary. And actually I saw a therapist about it for a little while, and he brought it down to, I asked him, you know, can I take any medications or anything like that? And he said, it's all about your breathing.
Wow.
And he showed me this amazing program.
That's a good therapist.
Yeah. And
Instead of giving you drugs.
Yeah. And he showed me this amazing program called HeartMath. And it's basically, he was able to show me what was going on with me physiologically when I'm having an attack, and how there's this sort of sine wave that you're supposed to follow the rhythm and get your breathing back on track. But and he was also very much, you know, singing the praises of yoga because of that very focal point on the breathing and the breath. And it's amazing, because when I'm doing yoga consistently, I can sense sometimes when I'm about to have an attack, and instead of attaching to it and getting sucked into the cycle of, oh my gosh, I can't breathe, and oh my gosh, I'm gonna fall over, or maybe I'm about to have a heart attack, I might die. I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's literally what you go through. I'm completely able now to control it and stave it off when I can feel the beginnings of it. I'm just able to say, you know what? That's not real. It's not happening to me. And you just, you know, get back into your breath and your breathing and take control and
come back to the moment.
And it's so powerful for me that I've been able to sort of overcome that. And when I do that,
and it is empowering.
It is empowering. Absolutely. And I was just thinking that basically, I think for me, overcoming number four leads me to number three, because when I have those moments and I'm able to say, you know, I suddenly feel a great amount of pride and splendor in the fact that I didn't let this thing overcome me. I preempted it and I was empowered.
You reclaimed yourself.
I reclaimed myself. Yeah. And so I think that there are moments when I'm able to do that, that I do feel that splendor of just,
I love that word.
That's
the
spice. Yes, how sweet.
It's Iyengar's word.
I love that, though. That's so,
what a great story.
But it must feel, I mean, I would imagine it would feel very empowering for you as well, that, you know, 3 days versus
3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean.
Exactly. And it all comes back to the breath. The major breakthrough that I had from this one was when I started back with pranayama.
Mm-hmm.
With, like, really putting a intense pranayama practice back into my daily practice. And the first day, the breath brought me out of it.
It's amazing.
And breath carries life force energy. It really does. It's that, it's, you know, we ride, everything rides on the breath. We can't exist physically, you know, in this dimension, in this world,
Right.
And knowing that you can rely on that gives me such a sense of safety.
Yes.
Sort of like when you describe the prana in the third eye during practice, that we can always go back and draw on that energy during the week, whenever, that it's always there.
It's right there, right?
And feeling that same way about sort of the breath and knowing that you can always go there. It's always a place, or like child's pose, it's always a safe place that you can go
it's
to.
Your and sanctuary.
Yeah.
I mean, you won't forget it on the bus, or you won't leave
right.
it somewhere.
Right.
I mean, it's like
you're on the highway when I'm driving a car, which is very unfortunate because I think I'm going to faint and like crash into five other cars. But
you know, it's there.
Yeah, right.
It is a comforting thought.
It is.
So yeah, so it's our practice is so important. To maintain these self-awarenesses and to maintain the conscious contact with both our inner selves and our higher selves, and with that overall power that supports and upholds and uplifts.
Would you
all
say
of us.
It is our true self?
I would definitely say that. I would venture to say that, absolutely.
That's how I kind of look at it or feel it.
It's the true self.
Before all the stuff gets on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Starts to cling to it and cloud it up. So a quote by Iyengar, "The whole technique of yoga, its practice and restraint, is aimed at dissociating consciousness from its identification with the phenomenal world, at restraining the senses by which it is ensnared, and at cleansing and purifying the lens of citta or consciousness until it transmits wholly and only the light of the soul."
That's kind of like what you were saying.
Exactly. So what form do these modifications take, and how do they manifest to us? We will be discussing this in our second segment. This concludes the first half of our discussion today. Namaste, and thank you all for your wonderful and inspiring contributions.
Please check our website, www.wayoftheyogi.com, for the link to this podcast. It is currently still under construction, but we hope to have it fully functioning very soon.
We're going to pause for a break now, and when we return, we'll pick up with the next two sutras of the Samadhipada.